Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Tirubhav Mahoshik Diti Srila Sanatan Goswami Prabhu ki jai, Sri Guru Purnim ki jai, Sri Vyasa Purnim ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda ki jai. So, pranam to all of you, good morning. And again, thanks so much for your presence here today. And we are celebrating today many things, of course. The very fact of being here together at the feet of Guru Maharaj is really worthy of the Mahotsav. It is itself a Mahotsav. But today we have some other layers of Mahotsav there, of great festivity and celebration. And mostly we are celebrating today the Disappearance Day, or Tirubhav Mahotsav of Sri Sanatana Goswami, as well as Guru Purnim, or the full moon day of, in commemoration of the principle of Guru Tattva. So, Srila Guru Maharaj requested me to speak on Guru Purnim today, and he plans to speak mostly about Sri Sanatana Goswami's Tirubhav today in the evening. So we'll try to share a few words about this celebration, Guru Purnim, which somehow will be like the Guru Day, if you will, in the yearly calendar, the day of the Guru, once a year, if you will, of course. For us as aspiring disciples, we don't want to limit the remembrance and celebration of Sri Guru to one day a year. That will be quite a curse for us. Like, you can only remember your Guru once a year. But somehow it's once a year, like, to make this point for those who, like us, who aspire to remember Sri Guru every single day of our lives. Sometimes one day a year also helps to reinforce particular commitment and conception and focus on what the principle of the Guru, so we can continue carrying on with that the remaining 364 days of the year, and then Guru Purnim comes again to inject another dose of focus. As we have one day a year officially to speak about Mahaprabhu, Guru Purnim, but hopefully we are not so cruel with ourselves and limit that to one day a year. So for us, this is something for every day, every moment of every day. A whole sense of identity we want to develop as disciples. That's an important point that we will try to develop today. Being a disciple is a sense of identity. It's not just like an upadhi, it's not just like a superficial designation. But it's who I am, or who I want to be, and all that I can be at the feet of my master. My potential is in the context of discipleship. So we are celebrating that today, especially. Celebrating the Guru means celebrating the opportunity for us to be disciples. So that's a very special celebration. And that, again, we want to maintain, to keep for eternity. And that's basically what we want to be forever. In the words of Srila Bhaktivedanta Goswami, who wants to be students forever, which means disciples forever. Krishna himself is a forever disciple of Sri Radha, as Guru Maharaj was saying the other day. He's the dancing student in the school of Sri Radha. So he himself considers, I'm a disciple of hers for eternity. So if the Absolute Himself has that sense of identity, I'm an eternal disciple, what to speak of us? So we'll try to go a little bit deep into this type of direction. Again, being a disciple is not a hobby, you say also in English? A hobby, okay. Something like a weekend thing or something like that. Today is Sunday. Okay, today I have to be disciple, Sunday feast, I have to go to the program, but it's a sense of being, again, very ideally, as we were speaking the other day, you know, when we wake up, the very first thing we do as disciples is not to take our cell phone and see the latest likes and dislikes on my particular pose, but I often put my head on the ground and try to offer myself to Sri Guru and remind to myself who I want to be at his feet. So all this we are celebrating today and much more for sure. So again, we can, of course, in a day like today, Guru Purnim, Guru Tattva, we can focus in so many directions and speak about the principle of Sri Guru from so many unlimited perspectives. But I'd like to focus today, with your permission, or without it, about the glories and mercy, of course, of Srila Gurudev. But especially about, again, our side as disciples. Because a day like Guru Purnim, we can glorify Guru, the principle of Guru in a general way, in a universal way, Samasti Guru, Tattva, or Vyasti Guru, the individuals that have come to our lives to represent that agency, and that's perfect. But that's 50% of the equation, as our Guru Maharaj always say. We belong to something called, not Guru Parampara, but Guru Sisya Parampara. Because without Sisya, there is no Guru. And without Guru, there is no Sisya. So the two parts of the equation have to be in place, Guru and Sisya, disciple. So, as beautiful as it is to speak about the glories of Srila Gurudev, and we should on a daily basis, it's equally beautiful, and hopefully you feel like that, to emphasize and remind ourselves our duties as disciples, and how to take best advantage in the proper sense of the term of that grace who is coming from Srila Gurudev. Because yes, Sri Guru is an ocean of mercy, but our question as disciples is what we are doing with that mercy, how we are interacting with that, what's my responsibility in connection to that mercy. Because as we say always, costless mercy doesn't mean priceless mercy. There is a price to pay. It's costless. We do not deserve that, but it doesn't mean that nothing is expected from us. No. And we can take that cheaply, but it's the highest, most valuable thing that has knocked on our door. So, so to begin with, in this connection, see, we would like to emphasize this disciple side, which is another side of the guru coin, if you will. It's important that we can also appreciate how Srila Gurudev is himself, herself, a disciple, to begin with. If you ask a guru, generally guru will say, "I'm a guru." No. But he will feel, she will feel, "I'm a disciple of my Gurudev." And even if I'm officiating in the role of accepting disciples, I'm just doing that in the service of my Gurudev. So actually the idea is that you can only have disciples if you feel that those disciples are actually manifestations of your Gurudev coming to engage you in further service. That's the only way you can survive being a guru. You don't feel I have disciples. You even feel all these Vaishnavas are actually my own Gurudev coming to commit me in further service. So instead of accepting disciples, I feel I am accepting my Gurudev more by accepting them, by committing myself in their service. So, so Srila Gurudev is the best example of a disciple, and we want to be disciples. We don't want to be gurus, we want to be disciples. And of course, the more you want to be disciple, naturally you will be a guru, in one sense, although you don't want that. So in one sense, we start to see how the, between the word guru and disciple, basically in one point, they're synonymous, in one sense. If you are a proper disciple, you will become guru for so many, and the proper guru will be a disciple. So, and as I like to say, what actually to be a guru means to remain a disciple but from a different seat. No? You just are changing the seat, but you still remain as a disciple. It's taking another form. No? It's taking a sometimes bigger seat, extra garlands or some of this stuff. But internally, the substance is not changing, or is changing, is increasing the discipleship, the sense of I'm a disciple. Again, Krishna is so proud of considering himself eternally a disciple of Sri Radha. That's making his heart swell with divine pride. There is place for pride in the context of being a disciple. Krishna himself is showing that, as Mahaprabhu especially. So let's speak about how Srila Gurudev, Sri Guru, the principle of Guru is showing this side. And for that also I'd like to connect with a part of the celebration that is in the context of Guru Purnim, which is also the birth of Srila Vyasadeva, Krishna Dvaipayan Vyasa. So today is also known as Vyasa Purnim. Sometimes you will hear it Guru Purnim, sometimes we call Vyasa Purnim. And Vyasadeva, of course, somehow is connected with this idea of Guru, because he's kind of the prototype of the spiritual preceptor, establishing Shastra, teaching it, and learning from it as well, as we will see. But to begin with, let's share some brief words, interesting words about Vyasadeva, how he was. Today we're celebrating his birth, and the birth of Vyasa is particularly unique. Because you hear, okay, Vyasa is the compiler of the Vedas, and he has revealed so many Shastra came through him. Veda, Vedanta, Mahabharata, Upanishads, Srimad Bhagavatam. So you may imagine the most highest possible type of paka, high birth for Vyasadeva. But interestingly, Shastra shares something that will make a point, which is the substance of Guru Tattva may come from unexpected backgrounds. In this case, we know that Vyasadeva is the son of Parasara Muni, the famous Maharishi, who, among other things, he's the one who gives the famous definition of who is Bhagavan, the six qualities so known. And interestingly, his mother is called Satyavati, and also Parasara Muni, yes, he's a sage, he's a well-reputed personality. Satyavati is coming from the, how do you say, fisherwoman's caste, or something like that. And at least overtly, externally, Parasara Muni felt attracted to her, and Vyasa was conceived through her, apparently without the parameters of how a sage should be conducting, out of infatuation, if you will. Of course, it is also explained that Parasara Muni, being who he was, he received a very special epiphany in his inner heart, knowing what was going to happen through this particular union. And it is said that, of course, he did it with that awareness, and eventually Vyasadeva came as a result of that. So again, my point is, this great personality representing the principle of Guru Tattva may come from an unexpected background. So be open to that. For Guru Tattva to reveal in your life, not necessarily from the direction that you think will be the most ideal. Like turban, long beard, Indian guy, certain age, whatever, certain caste, and so on. So again, from this comes Sri Vyasadeva, the greatest. Vyasa means compiler, Krishna Dvaipayan is his name in particular. There are many Vyasas. Vyasa is basically the name for the function. And his name is Krishna Dvaipayan, and through him we have received all this unlimited revelation, Veda, Vedanta, Upanishad, Mahabharata, Puranas, and especially Bhagavat Purana. So, in one sense, we could also say we are today celebrating Vyasa Purnim because of the advent, quote-unquote, of Srimad Bhagavatam through someone like Vyasa. So for us, Gaudias in particular, everyone is celebrating in India nowadays, today. Many. Vyasa Purnim, Guru Purnim, but Gaudias will be celebrating from their particular perspective, if you will, with certain highlights that represent for us. And one of them is Srimad Bhagavatam, coming through the Samadhi of Vyasa, of course being the main Pramana Shiromani, the crest jewel of all scriptural evidence for us in our tradition. So Vyasa, as I mentioned, is the very prototype of Guru teaching Shastra, manifesting Shastra, teaching Shastra to his disciples. Especially he's known for teaching Shastra to Srila Sukadeva Goswami in the context of Bhagavatam. As we say yesterday, Vyasa giving the Gyan Anjana, the, how say, the ointment of knowledge, the Shastra Chakshu, the scriptural eye. So as a result of that, eventually the Prema Anjana, or the salve of divine love, will be affecting our vision. We will receive a Bhava Netra, or an eye of love, basically. And investing himself so much, that's an important point. No? Vyasa as a guru, he's investing himself as a teacher so much in teaching the disciple. That's a very beautiful thing. It's not, because sometimes we miss that side of the equation and we think only the disciple has to surrender or to give himself or to dedicate to the guru. But we should never lose sight that actually the guru is doing the main surrender to begin with. The kickstart event coming from that side, basically. Deep commitment with the ideal, with the delivering of knowledge, with giving the proper example of that. That's the very idea of guru. Guru means he who dispels darkness by delivering a particular teaching and supporting that with example, walking the talk. Being very, having lots of integrity. Srila Jiva Goswami says in Bhakti Sandarbha that ideally a guru, a not so ideal guru, he will say something like that, is someone who is not conducting examination. And of course there are many ways to interpret this, but one of the interpretations is he's not conducting examination regarding how much all that he or she is teaching to others, how much he's putting into practice himself or herself. Which is a very important point. Because it's easy to, as Guru Maharaj said the other day, it's easy to sit and talk like I'm doing now. It's easy. It may seem difficult for you, but it's relatively easy to sit in this fancy big place and speak, have a mic, two mics, three cameras, and so on, and open my mouth for an hour. But it's not so easy to sit and chant, Guru Maharaj said the other day. You can sit and talk, but sit and chant, and really chant, and really sit, that's another thing. Have a life of bhajan. I was speaking, remember, also last year, I met Vaishnav Pad Das Babaji. He's a success, one of the representatives of Sananta Das Babaji in Radhakund. And he would tell me exactly the same thing. He also, because he was giving like three classes per day to thousands of people every class. Say, I can do that like this. I mean, it's not difficult for me. But to sit and do bhajan, that's not so easy. And these are personalities who really are dedicated to that. But they're making this point. So the point is, guru is walking the talk and sitting the talk as well. So you have to talk, you have to sit the talk, and then you have to walk the sitting, or walk in the talk if you want to complain that. So, but in connection to the teaching side, again, the guru is investing, he's giving his whole life and time and energy to a disciple, to a proper disciple. That's a very important point. Guru Maharaj always likes to say this: everyone is looking for a guru, but the guru is looking for disciples. Not in the sense of I want to acquire followers and money or anything, but real disciples. I'm looking for real disciples, for someone who is really willing to give himself or herself totally to this thing that I have to give, that is making my heart beat in such a special way. What to do with this? As Guru Maharaj will say sometimes very nicely, guru is a desperate person. In one sense, the guru seems like a very self-satisfied person, and it is, but on top of that self-satisfaction, there is some divine dissatisfaction coming as a result of love. Love makes us full, but also creates some necessity to be sure in a particular way. It's overflowing experience. So he always likes to quote this famous verse by Sri Rupa Goswami: Tundi tanda vinira timbitante tundavali labdaye karna krodha kadam vini ghatayate Karnarbudevyasprihaṁ Teta prangana sangini vijayate Sarvendriyanam kritim No jane janita kiyat viramritai Krishne tivarnam dvai. So this is possible the most important verse regarding Sri Harinama, one of them, at least for me it's one of the favorite ones. It was Srila Rupa Goswami saying, "Oh Krishna, I don't want to ask you anything because I'm the one who defined bhakti as sanyavilasityasanya. So I define uttam bhakti as something devoid of total ulterior motives and selfish desire, but I have something to ask, actually, without contradicting my definition of uttam bhakti." Like he's saying, Krishna Varnam, in these two syllables, Krishna, there's so much nectar, it's like dripping out, overflowing, ecstatic substance. This is too much. I'm overflowing with this. So please give me 1,000,000 years to properly honor that divine sound descent in my life. And if I ask something else, give me 1,000,000 tongues to properly host and do such justice to the sweetness that is inhabiting these two syllables, Krishna. I mean, I'm finding my whole sense of being collapsing by such a wave of sweetness. Madhuram, Madhuram, Madhuram. We have this type of definitions in by our acharyas. There's so much sweetness. This tradition is not apt for people with diabetes. Be careful with that. No, there's lots of sweetness there. So Rupa Goswami said that I'm so much in need. I mean, he's a needy person. When you love, you are needy. We don't have a clue what does it mean to be needy until and unless we reach divine love. That means to be really needy. Before that, we think we have so many necessities, but they are basically insignificant in comparison to the necessity of divine love. We may have to fulfill them so we can reach necessity proper eventually. So the point that Guru Maharaj makes is Guru is a needy person. Guru is desperate because he's full with something that is overflowing him, capturing him, possessing him, and he needs thousands of millions of years and tongues so he can do something about it. And that's what the disciples have to offer to the Guru. Siddhanta Saraswati will say, I'm not requesting anything from you, only one thing, give me your ears. I mean, that was a very tricky request, because he knew, if you give me your ears, you're giving me everything. That's the entry point, that's the passport. So I enter through your ears, pass through your head for a moment, make sense there, and go straight to your heart and capture the main section. So Srila Gurudev is asking that to his disciples, give me your ears. My ears are not enough, I only have two. Give me your pair, 2, 4, 6, 8. Somehow I find some relief in trying to do something with this overflowing. So, in this way, the Guru is looking for disciples, in that sense, looking to for some assistance in suiting his divine necessity. And proportionately, of course, we as sisters are expected to reciprocate accordingly, to give ourselves fully. The more we glimpse at the dignity of this ideal, as Srila Siddhanta Maharaj will put it, we will realize I am the offering. I have to offer myself fully. I can offer Gurudev some dakshina, some stuff that I can do with my body, my senses, but the ultimate swaha is me jumping into the fire. He's already there, actually. So if I jump into the fire, means I'm entering to the heart of Sri Guru. Sarvartatmarpanam Guru, says the Bhagavatam. How is a disciple expected to reciprocate with Sri Guru? One is expected to give to Sri Guru all of one's wealth. Don't be scared. No. And all of one's being. No. So wealth means not necessarily money, but means that you consider wealth in your life. That you consider some value, throw that at the feet of of Bhagavan in the form of Sri Guru come into your life. And then you will find the ultimate value. Because Srila Gurudev wants to give us the ultimate sense of value. Paramartha. Artha means value, wealth. But Guru wants to give Paramartha, the ultimate wealth. So, Srila Vyasadeva is a very unique example in this connection. How much he's investing himself in being a teacher. There's a very nice pranam mantra, not to him, but to Sukadev Goswami in the Bhagavatam. But actually, indirectly, that mantra is praising Srila Vyasadeva. That's at the very beginning of the second chapter, first canto of the Bhagavatam, second verse. Yam pravajanta manupita napita krityam dvaipayana miraha katara ajuhava putreti tam majatayatara vobhinedus tam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanatosmi. So it's a mantra where Sukadev Goswami is offered pranam, and it is described how when he went out of the womb of his mother, immediately he ran into the forest, as you know. And Vyasadev ran after him, asking, Putreti, oh Putra, oh son. Try to imagine the mother is present here. You're giving birth and the baby just like, of course he was 16 years old at that time. So first try to imagine a 16-year-old pregnancy. Maybe that's more difficult. But after that 16-year-old waiting for your child to come, finally he's coming. He runs into the forest. So Vyasadeva is running after him, telling him, Putra, Putra, son, son. But only the trees are replying to him, says the verse. No? Son, son. The sound comes from the trees. And there are different explanations to the verse. I won't go into that direction. But my point is, it's not that Vyasadeva is running after Sukadeva because he's an attached Grihamedi or something like this. Son, at least let's share some few minutes before you leave. You're my son. No. The point is that Vyasadeva knew so much how fit of a candidate Sukadeva Goswami was to receive the Bhagavatam. And now this fit recipient was running to the forest. And Vyasadeva wanted to pour his own heart, all the Bhagavad Katha, into the heart of a fit disciple. He wanted to share the wine of Bhagavatamrita. And he's running to the forest. So Vyasadeva is running after him. Son, in the sense, return. I have something to share with you. And as we know, Sukadev didn't return first. Vyasadev sent some disciples to the forest to bring some wood, to sing some verses of the Bhagavatam. And then Sukadev came like hypnotized back to the ashram. And then he was schooled by Vyasa systematically in the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. So on one side we have this part, you know, how much the guru is willing to invest himself into the teaching. We can see that, of course, in the example of our Guru Maharaj, how much he is identified, if you will, with that role as giving the teaching and, of course, personifying the teaching by walking the talk, by sitting the talk in his bhajan, in his personal interaction. But also, remember, today we want to emphasize the sisya side of the Guru and as well our prospect as disciples. So the Guru also is a student. And Vyasadeva is a very unique example in that connection as well. Because as you know, Vyasadeva first talked the Bhagavatam, first revealed the Bhagavatam. Let's go in order and properly honor all of Vyasadeva's contribution. First the Bhagavatam revealed itself through Vyasa in Samadhi. Then he talked that Bhagavat to Sukadev Goswami. And then when Sukadev Goswami, as we know, appeared out of the blue, Jadrik Chaya, when Parikshit Maharaj was looking for who may reply to his questions, he started to speak Bhagavatam, and where was Vyasadeva there? Sukadev's father and guru. He was in the very first row of the audience, totally enraptured, hearing the Bhagavatam from his disciple. From his son, in ecstasy, unable to contain himself about all that was coming from that upgraded Bhagavad Katha. He knows how much this line applies. Vivata Bhagavatam Rasam Malayam. How much you can actually relish this fruit perpetually, constantly dripping this amrita, this juice. So he was there. Not only Vyasa was there, interestingly, but Vyasa's own Gurudev was there, first line of the first row of the audience. Narada Muni, Vyasadev, hearing Bhagavad from the life, from the mouths of Sukadev, and unable to contain themselves. So this is parampara. This parampara is not just, okay, Guru speaking. Of course, Guru speaking, everyone is hearing, but Guru may also be there hearing. And as Srila Narasimha Maharaj will say, when wise men speak, wise men hear, listen. It's not that the ones speaking are the wise guys and the one in the audience are the dumb ones or something like that. So the point is, this is parampara. Everyone is guru, everyone is disciple, technically speaking. If you want to speak about Sukadev, Vyasadev, Naradev, all of them are guru. They're crucial members of our disciple succession. But all of them are there as students, hearing. And willing to continue hearing and learning, because there is no end to how much it can be said. Ananta katara sasya. Uddhava will say, Kim brahma jadmavir ananta katara sasya. Referring to the nature of Bhagavad Gita, unending relishing. So again, that's why we are calling our line not only Guru Parampara, but Guru Sisya Parampara. There is Guru, but the Guru is disciple. They are disciples, they are guru, but the guru is disciple. So I try to emphasize that because we should be accustomed, and I think we spoke a little bit about this in Finland. Every time we speak about guru, we should get accustomed to think in terms of disciple immediately. And not only alienate the guru as one figure, and the principle of disciple is disconnected from that. It's not possible to disconnect one from the other. We cannot have one without the other, as Guru Maharaj mentions. So, every time we try to speak about Sri Guru, it's important to keep in mind this. Not only to see Gurudev's side as a disciple, because that's crucial, but also to see our side as a disciple in connection to his side as a disciple and as a guru, of course. All this will help us to grow in intimacy in our approach and connection to Sri Guru. As Srila Rupa Goswami mentions, what's his word? Visramvena Guru Seva. So we should relate with Srila Gurudev with this sense of intimacy, affection. But of course, this is not mundane familiarity. It's not like, okay, I have to follow Rupa Goswami, and you just try to rush where angels fear to tread or something. It's a gradual development of a relationship. So it's important to know how both Guru, Sisya should behave. The Bhagavad is sharing so many examples of this, as we mentioned. Srila, going back to Vyasadeva for a moment, and this spirit of student forever. He's Guru, the prototype of Guru, but we know he compiled Veda, Vedanta, Upanishads, Puranas. But in the sincerity of his own trajectory, he was feeling unsatisfied yet. So he was not like, okay, I've written such an amount of books, so I'm done. And everyone has to worship me. I mean, nobody did what I did, so I can take some rest, I can retire myself, I can go to whatever. But no, he was in his own inner search, journey, he was feeling, I feel this is totally a failure. Imagine, a whole room full of, if you have to put all what Vyasa wrote in printed form, maybe it could fill the whole room or something. And he was sitting like, is this a failure? I could burn the whole thing. So that was his, how progressive he was in his own journey, basically. He was open to further progress, as we were speaking the other day with our Guru Maharaj in a car. I don't know who was the driver there. Abhay was driving, yeah. He was talking to us like, I mean, for me, he would say like basically, I'm open to progress and to change and to learn more. For me, it's natural. And he will say that, like, shocked about how other practitioners, or maybe God brothers of him or others, will not be willing, will not have that willingness. But for him, it's like, I mean, it's obvious. I should be willing to grow and learn every time more. The more you advance, the more you are willing to learn and change, basically. That's a symptom of how much you are advanced, not the contrary. So Srila Vyasadeva was open to this further progress. As Mahaprabhu will say, Ramanandaro, eho bhaya agi kaha ar. That superficial, go deeper. That superficial, go deeper. That superficial, go deeper. So that's a very famous dictum in our tradition. No? Like it's the very principle of, not in a neurotic way, we're saying that's superficial, go deeper, not chastising anyone, but inviting ourselves to, as we said the other day, not getting accustomed to take Krishna consciousness for granted. Hopefully, let's pray together to never reach that point. We will think, I already know what Krishna consciousness is about. Let's make a chain prayer for that not to happen ever to any one of us. Not that you reach a point of, I think I heard that class. I think I know Prahlad Charit. I think I already read the Bhagavatam. I think I know what Guru Maharaj is saying. I think I don't have anything else to learn, basically. That's the implication. Well, actually, the more you are growing, the more you get closer to the other side of the coin, like Srila Srila Maharaj will say, the more you get closer to the infinite, you will realize there is no limit for making progress here. So the last thing you can say there is, I already know this. Because you'll be overwhelmed with how many unlimited opportunities to grow are there. You cannot say, I know anything. Whatever you think you know, it can be known from so many further layers of depth that you shouldn't be as brave as to say, I know that. I know that on one initial layer. Okay, you can say that, but to fully capture the whole thing, that's not possible for anyone. And Krishna himself is finding no limits to his own beauty and depth. He himself, having his experience with himself, so many statesman in Shastra, he doesn't find limit to his own qualities because they are keep growing and expanding. So, what to speak of us? So, that's the principle of Sri Guru. Vyasadeva open to further growth. And because of that, we have the revised edition of Srimad Bhagavatam that we know as the Srimad Bhagavatam per se. Before, we can speak more in terms of Bhagavad Purana was there, but then Vyasa's insatisfaction created a whole situation for Srimad Bhagavatam to come. And that's, the result of that is Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Gaudiya Sampradaya, in one sense, is a byproduct of Vyasa's dissatisfaction and progressiveness as a disciple, interesting, as a student. And on the other side, of course, if you want to see another example of student, you have Parikshit Maharaj. The very name says it all. Parikshit means the inquirer. So it is said that he, from the very womb, he had darshan of Krishna. Of course, that's a very special case. And he left the womb. He will just examine every single person to see, are you the person I saw in the womb? No. Are you the person I saw in my womb? Like scanning every single personality. Parikshit means looking in every direction from that person. And being totally essentialist. No, he was the emperor of the whole world. And as we know, when he was about to die, he was looking for a guru, basically. And he was a man with experience in the world. He was the emperor of the world. He was a great devotee. And he was looking for a guru. And his guru appeared. But again, not in the packaging you will imagine. Was a 16-year-old naked boy. But Vyasadeva, Parikshit saw beyond all this from relativity and saw, there is Gurudev. He didn't say, that guy is younger than me. How can he teach me? He's naked. No? They say that Sukadeva was not even attached to a coping. a loincloth. That's a lot. He didn't have a loincloth, but he was not even aware he didn't have a loincloth. That was his standing. He appeared like a totally avadut, surrounded by boys and people, and some people were throwing things to him, and he was totally, how do you say, obnoxious? Totally in another reality. So, is this too low or it's okay? Because I'm moving the whole thing and...
Yeah, it is.
Yes, sorry. So, let's see. There?
Yeah.
Good? Mm-hmm. Good. So Pariksit Maharaj could see beyond all these formalities. We say for some people now, they think, okay, if I have a guru, it has to be Indian, has to be old, long beard, nice turban, nice website, some space, minimum number of followers, for sure, big crowds, hopefully, and all this type of relative superficial consideration that has nothing to do with Adhikar, the real eligibility. So Pariksit Maharaj saw Gurudev is there. He saw beyond all these formalities of age, background, and so on. So he's showing to us the Bhagavad, and he's showing through him how we as disciples should also be Saragrahi, essentialist seekers. And of course, Sukadev Goswami, as a guru, interestingly, he's instructing Parikshit and all these great personalities. Vyasa is there, Narada is there, he's delivering this wonderful discourse of the Bhagavatam. But after he delivers the whole thing, he wakes up from the Vyasasan and disappears. Totally unattached. Not like, okay, now I have a huge following, so I will take their emails, so I will make them part of my crowd, they will support my future, whatever. My future copies. Nothing like that. No, he just woke up and entered the forest. As he appeared out of nowhere, he disappeared in the forest. Of course, in another forest, after speaking the Bhagavatam, he upgraded the notion of what's forest for us Gaudiyas, no? Vrindavan, that's the forest we want to go. But my point is, he showed us a guru, he did his part, he instructed, he did what he had to do. Okay, business is over, goodbye. And disappear. Very interesting standard. So let's conclude, trying to go a little bit deeper into us. We have spoken about Vyasa as a guru, Vyasa as a disciple, and how the Bhagavan is showing all these different examples and importance of considering the Sisya principle every time we chose to think, we choose to think about guru. But let's go to ourselves as prospective disciples also. Some of you will be accepting initiation in a few days, so that's also an important, very important step. A process, of course, as you know, it's not something that happens in one single moment, but something that we have to know what to do with that thing that we are receiving. So let's emphasize this idea of Sisya again, that always is present every time we speak about Guru. And that, as we say, I think in Finland, that's mentioned in Shastra over and over again. If you want to think about three, at least, maybe the three more important verses that define who is the Guru in Shastra, or three of the most important ones, all of the three speak about who is a disciple. And they start speaking about who is a disciple. They speak about more who is a disciple than what's a guru. Interesting. Now, Gita, Tadvidi Pranipati, Napari Prashne, Nasivaya, Upadekshyanti, Te, Yanam, Yagnastata, Darshana. Almost last line speaks about guru. But the first two lines are, disciple is expected to approach Sri Guru in terms of saranagati, surrender, is expected to inquire in a humble mood, is expected as a result of that change to render seva. And the Guru is someone who has knowledge of Shastra and realized vision out of that knowledge, Tattva Darshana. So that's the Bhagavatam, the Gita, sorry. Similarly, parallel verse in the Bhagavatam, Tashmat Guru Prapadita Jignyasu Shriya Uttamam Sabdi Pare Chanishnatam Brahmani Upasamashraya. Again, beginning, Tashmat Guru Prapadita. If you want to surrender to a Guru, you should surrender to a Guru. And Jignyasu Shriya Uttamam, the disciples should be inquiring sincerely about the highest possible welfare. So we as disciples should have that disposition, not just Gurudev I would like to ask, but just on this level, to this degree, do not go deeper, please. Now, do not commit myself more. No, no. You have to be willing to go to the very depths in which Sri Guru is living, basically, swimming in the depths of that ocean. No? Not just float on the salty waters on the surface of the ocean, but go and find the jewels at the very bottom of the ocean. So, the other day I was seeing one video about the ocean. They speak about the different depths of the ocean and how the deeper you go, at one point you cannot go deeper, you die. So much pressure and so dark, it becomes so dark, and basically it's impossible to go. Although there are some species there, and they have somehow found with cameras, they look pretty weird. So thinking about this analogy, you know, like, okay, it's a gurus. May look, they are inhabiting the very depths. It's very dark for us. We are fearful of going there. It seems like you have to go through the dark night of the soul, if you will. You have to die to so many things that seems like darkness. And it may seem that those who inhabit those depths are weird. But you, they are not weird. You are the weird just floating on the superficial salty waters of the ocean and trying to survive on salty water. That's not a very healthy diet. But there are so many Chintamani gems in the very depths, so gurus invite them to go deeper. So Sri Jignasu Sri Uttama, trying to inquire into the highest possible good, to the highest possible attainment. With that spirit we should approach Srila Gurudev. Not to solve financial problems, emotional problems. We need to solve all those things as well. But do not expect Sri Guru to be a whatever. Assistant in every single field of your existence, or an expert in that. It's not necessarily has to happen. So that's another verse, and the last one from Mundaka Upanishad says that Vijnanartham Sutra Vijnanartham Sagurume Vavigachit Samitpanishrutriyam Ramanishtam. Again, if you want to attain this highest wealth of divine wisdom, you must have a guru, as Guru Maharaj will say, you must. Not like a superficial imposition, but you must, you have to do that. That's the way. But Samit Pani, immediately. Before Shrotriyam Brahmanistam. First the disciple, then the guru. First the disciple, then the guru. So Samit Pani means you have to approach Srila Gurudev carrying the wood, the firewood for sacrifice. With this classical Vedic scenario of Swaha, the disciple going to the forest to bring wood for the master to continue the yajna, which of course, in practical terms, you have to be willing to sacrifice for this ideal. And Sri Guru is Shrutiyam Brahmanishtam. He knows Shruti and he speaks in Brahman, in the Absolute. So it's interesting, these three main verses first speak about who is the disciple and then who is the Guru. Because if you are not aware of what's expected from you as a disciple and you are not willing to enter into that, there won't be Guru. Even if you have your guru here, you won't feel the guru, you won't find the guru, because the disciple is not there yet. So many people say, I'm looking for a guru, first look for the disciple in you. Where are you as a disciple? If you are in the proper place, guru will manifest accordingly. Because if you say, I've been looking for a guru for 35 years and I'm not finding, how much you have looked for the disciple in you first? Probably that's the answer to that dilemma, basically. So we as a sisya has a role to play, a commitment. And that's why, but again, this is included in the equation of guru. You cannot speak about guru without this. Without disciples, there are no gurus. Guru Maharaj sometimes quotes that someone wrote on social media or something. Like, I'm starting to give initiations now. So now I'm a guru. So whoever is interested, send me a private message or something like that. And he was laughing, of course, because also, how you can be a guru if you don't have disciples yet? I'm a guru now. Like, I've decided I will be a guru. So someone will like over there? Some. So it doesn't happen like that. So if you speak about guru, disciple is included there. That's why we are celebrating Guru Purnima. We don't have Sisya Purnima. Because that's included in the Guru Purnima equation. You follow? I mean, that's included there. You have to read Guru Sisya Purnima. And we have to add that, basically. Mm-hmm. So since that's so included in today's celebration, let's conclude mentioning some ideas about, again, we as disciples, which is... And with this, of course, I do not mean to discourage anyone or to feel anyone like pressure. You have to be like this and you have to reach this as soon as possible. But we have to be at least, how to say, clear about how we as disciples should gradually progress in a particular direction, wherever we may be in the whole journey. But to have a clear idea of the goal to attain, that's always and always established. First, have a clear goal, a clear notion of the goal, and then you will have to know how to proceed in your practice towards that goal. If you don't have a clear idea of where to attain, what you are doing at present, what's the focus of that? Where are you pointing to? So, of course, Krishna and Guru, as we know, appears in our life as a representative of Krishna. And as we spoke yesterday, a little bit somehow connected, Krishna is not someone who is famous as putting pressure, if you will. He's famous for reciprocating accordingly to the degree of one's approach. Whatever type of relationship you want with him, he will approach you accordingly. So since Guru is representing that agency, we can apply the same idea with the Guru. Whatever relationship you want to have with the Guru, he will reciprocate accordingly. Of course, not any weird thing you may have in your mind. I want to have this Madhurya relationship with the Guru. No, it's not happening, sorry. But there is place for different degrees of approach and proximity and intimacy. So, if you want to be, pleased with your daily sadhana service, Gurudev will be pleased with your daily sadhana service. But again, the standard is according, the standard is set according to our own appetite. No? What's your appetite as a disciple? And according to that, there will be proper reciprocation from Krishna's side, from Guru's side. We are losing Saragrahi today?
No.
She's there, no, I know. Notebooks in hand. Well, the same with Srinam. Srinam is called as Harinam Chintamani. So what does it mean, Chintamani? You tell me. What does it mean that?
That it can transform from something that's low quality to something transcendental.
Yes, but also it means that whatever you desire, that comes to happen. Which is, I will say, more specific definition, especially what we are speaking now, in the sense, whatever you desire, that will Karina will give you that. So, the idea with this is, oh great. No, the idea is, be careful with what you desire. That's the idea of Chintam. It's not like, wow, great, we have a free, this, like, deliverer of desires or whatever I want. Yes, but the implication is, be responsible with that. Now, what are you desiring? Well, chanting, because that's what's coming. And the same again applies with Sri Guru. The same with mantra. And mantra is so powerful, it's such a powerful formula, but which is our approach, basically. If our personal will is inadequate, mantra won't have any effect whatsoever. Mantra remains totally powerful, but if you don't position yourself in the proper mood, mantra is nothing yet. The same with the Guru. Guru may be Uttam Mahabhagavat, but if you as a disciple are not doing your part, and we may be using that as an excuse, my Gurudev said Uttam Mahabhagavat, my Gurudev said Uttam Mahabhagavat, shouting that to the world and trying to convince everyone, and maybe just as an excuse not to do my part as a disciple. Maybe some other has a guru who is a Madhyam Adhikari, but is a more surrendered disciple to that Madhyam Adhikari, is making much more advances. So, we are, I mean, in the moment of initiation or in the moment of acceptance, we are signing a contract, if you will, with the Parampara. There is a commitment, two-way street coming. It's not just one-way street, it's reciprocal dealing. And there are some terms, some conditions in the contract. There are some small letters there, so better you are looking properly. It's every contract. What's our part of the deal here? How do I position myself to... I mean, Gurudev is giving me something, but I will find what I need to find by doing my part. For example, Gurudev, I may have a question. Gurudev replies to my question. But I will find the answer to my question by applying myself in sadhana in connection to what Gurudev told me. Gurudev may say something, but what do I do with that thing he said? If I properly incorporate that, I will find the final answer to my question. If not, Gurudev may have given the perfect answer, but if not, I'm putting that in practice, I may feel, I'm not fully satisfied yet. No, that's not making full sense yet to me, and so on. So, yeah, God, Guru, they are such powerful personalities. So much mercy is there, and we should never get tired of singing those glories. But they cannot do our job of being receptive to what they want to give. They want to give something, but we are the ones who have to be the proper container for that. We have to do that part. You cannot ask for it, please receive your grace that is coming to me, but you be the container of your own grace. I mean, it doesn't make sense. You have to be do a part. As we were speaking, I think, yesterday, it's not so much about how we become worthy of causeless mercy, because that's an oxymoron. Causeless mercy means you are not worthy, and you will never be. But you have something to do, nonetheless, which is how to position myself to catch that mercy. To follow, that's, there are two different things. I'm unworthy of this. That there's nothing I can do to deserve it, but there's something I can do to receive it. And I need to receive it. And I need to do something to receive it. I have to be positioning myself in a certain way to catch it, that wave. As Srila Sayamara will say, try to catch the universal wave. So, we have to be to harmonize these two sides, trying to be receptive to what's coming from Srila Gurudev, but also to be active simultaneously. Not to be receptive doesn't mean just passive reception, like, okay, Gurudev, fill me with your mercy. overflowing. But you have to act also, you have to use your criteria, and you have to have full dependence, but full responsibility also. You have to learn how to combine these two things. Full dependence doesn't mean, okay, I surrender, Gurudev, do whatever you want with me, think for me, tell me what to do. Not necessarily. No, you have to think, learn to think. As Guru Maharaj will say, Guru is not telling the disciple what to think, but how to think. And then you think. And so on. So we should take responsibility, like offer our will for the pleasure of this sadhu. That's a very... Once I remember speaking with Vaishnava Maharaj in Argentina, he came with that idea. We should offer our will in the most tasteful way for the pleasure of the Vaishnava. I say, oh, that's a nice realization. Now, I have a will, I have individuality. How can I make that offering as tasty as possible for their pleasure? So that's sadhana. We are adding masala here and there on a daily basis, so we make the proper combination of tastes relishable for our gardens. But again, we have to do our part. We don't have just to remain glorifying that on a lip service level, but internally also give for that. If not, as we say, this is another form of sahajism. Sahajism, that doesn't only mean trying to rush to the highest thing without deserving it, but also being invited to a higher stage that I need to go and not being willing to do so. That's another form of complacency, comfort zone. or showing apparent appreciation for an exalted ideal, but not taking the adequate means to achieve it, to go there. You follow my point? And this is a tricky thing, because again, there's so many nice things we can say about Guru. And hopefully all those things are glorification proper, but all that can become a very subtle device to increase my sajjana side, if you will. and you can end up using the Guru for that. Guru, you are so great, so incredible, so this, and your mercy is that. And he will say, yeah, but I would like to see you. No, but you are so great and so merciful, and your mercy is, no, but please do. No, but Guru, you are so great, so merciful. Don't say that. So, and we may end up realizing, actually, I'm revealing some hidden indifference and cheap regard I have for that personality. Which is, again, not only lip service. So that means to be a disciple. Now, the word disciple is tied, like it or not, with the word discipline. But discipline also, what does it mean? Because sometimes devotees understood some words, the Gaudiya glossary, quite in military terms or something like that. No? So being strict doesn't, being disciplined doesn't mean like rigid sadhana, kind of machine-like. No? Or sometimes they use this word strict. Oh, that devotee is very strict. I don't know what you mean by that. No? I don't know what you mean by that. If you tell Maharaj, oh, you are very strict sannyasi, I will sincerely be concerned about what you mean by that. I will ask you, what do you mean by that? Because sometimes in the name of being strict, you are just, whatever, no? Just justifying or even promoting fanaticism, fundamentalism, bigotry, hard-heartedness, and so many things. No? So being disciplined doesn't mean like I'm a sadhana machine or something like that. Not like chanting my rounds. There comes Maharaj, be careful, he's very strict. Do not step like this devotee would make that. I shared that with Gaur Narayan some time ago. This, you remember? This video, I don't know how to call that, like a little short video game. One video of a video game he made, like a joke, and this, like, this strict brahmachari is walking, no? and the Mataji, it's like a game that the Mataji has to reach from this place to this side, and all the brahmacharis are walking in between, chanting japa. So she has to get to the goal without stepping on their shadow. That was so hilarious. That was a good one. Like eight, from the 80s, this style of video game from those times. If you are a millennial, you may not be able to fully relish the rasa of what I'm saying. And the Mataji is trying to step on the brahmacharya's coming, goes back for a minute, and she starts to. And finally, she crosses a brahmacharya, and the brahmacharya says, "You stepped on my shadow, and I curse you to become a lizard." And the lizard figure comes, and game over. Anyhow. We laugh because we should be crying, actually. So that's not what I mean by discipline. That's my point. I'm using even video games to illustrate the idea. So to be a disciple and be disciplined basically means I'm willing to be transformed by grace. That means to be disciplined in the real substantial sense. And because if not, all this other external rigidity is just a show and an excuse not to be really disciplined, not to really change. You follow? When you present this kind of one-like, perfect sadhana, basically you are trying to say, do not enter here, nobody can tell me what to do because I'm perfect. Look how many rounds I'm chanting, how early I'm waking up, nobody can tell me anything. But actually that's not discipline. Real discipline means I'm willing to change. That's my guru was saying. You know, spiritual life means change. The first time I hear that quote, I almost fall to the ground. I mean, I was already in the ground, but I also fall. Simple, but the implications of that, spiritual life means change. Constantly. Because we are supposed to practice spiritual life forever. That means change forever. A friend of mine would like to describe this dynamics of discipline and unwillingness to be transformed by grace like an alchemy process. When you put some particular material into fire to extract its further, how to say, brightness and intrinsic potential, basically, if we want to speak in those terms. And that has to be put into the fire and taken out from the fire and work on that, put that again into the fire, take that out of the fire, many times entering into the fire. So that's very much a very interesting symbology of what does it mean to be a disciple. And guru sometimes is compared to the fire. So you approach the fire, stay there for a while, but at some point you feel, oh, it's burning. So you need to take some distance. And then, okay, you go back, and gradually you develop a fire-like identity that you can forever live there. Like Guru Maharaj will say, if you want to wonder what must be going on in the sun, I would like to live there. You have to develop a fire-like body, an Agni Deha or something. So similarly, the Guru's fire-like, if you want to have permanent proximity, you have to fire, enter into the... And gradually, you should enter more and more into the fire. We could call the fire as different tests that come into our life to see where we are standing, which are very important. We need to be put to test to know where the hell we are, basically. Because if not, you can idealize. Oh, I think, yeah, I'm almost a Manjari and I'm getting closer to a Sakti, or I think I'm hearing the flute. No, and someone is playing the flute. And then you have a test that comes to show you where you really are. And maybe you are there, hopefully, but probably that's not the case. And it's okay. And you should be happy to realize where actually you actually are. And you are not having a fictitious idea of where you are, who you are. So we should pray for those tests to come, to shed light where I am. That's kind of fire. No? Kunti Devi will pray in that sense. He will say, send me more problems. You know this famous prayer that nobody's willing to repeat generally. And it may seem like masochist or something, but actually she's saying, every time some quote-unquote problem comes, I'm seeing you more. I'm having further darshan of you. So actually I'm not seeing a problem. I'm seeing you more and more. I'm not seeing more and more problems. So problems is another way of saying tests. Because what is a test for us, as we spoke yesterday, we generally perceive that as a problem. Or we generally perceive that as suffering. But that's suffering, as I like to say, basically another word for suffering is non-integrated complexity. There is some complexity in your life that you have not learned to integrate yet. So it's not inside the proper equation and it's like disturbing. But that disturbance is showing, I need to learn how to integrate this. How to make this part of the equation, of the ultimate synthesis. So again, if we as disciples, if we want to be disciples, would you be willing to be put to test? Would you be willing to all these many opportunities that will come to test my fidelity, to serve the interests of my master? And I may fail some days. I won't be celebrating that, but I will be happy to see where I actually stand and develop further desire to be where I should be. To connect with the inner desire of Srila Gurudev. Manubhishtam, Srila Narottam Das Thakur. A few minutes and we are concluding. Narottam Das Thakur will offer pranam to Rupa Goswami that way. Sri Chaitanya Manubhishtam. So we should be developing our capacity to rendering mana. Manubhishtam. Mana means mind. Abhishtam means desire. So Manubhishtam Seva. To render service to the desires of the mind of my master. What's in the mind of my master? How I can identify with that? How can I serve that? How can I satisfy those things that are in the heart of Srila Gurudev, but that he's not demanding in a, how do you say, blatant way? And that's an important point. You shouldn't expect the Guru to tell you all the things like clearly in your face, because there are certain things that are very intimate and confidential. And again, the Guru is not imposing himself. So he wants some things, but he will not demand them blatantly. He will leave everyone to freely decide how do you choose to be in relation to Him, how do you choose to approach Him, how do you choose to... Again, love is a voluntary choice. That's a big commitment. So Srila Gurudev will hold inside his heart these many jewels, these secrets, and the sensitive servant will care to discover them gradually. But he won't be just like, hey, you have to inquire. No, no, no. He will give place and space to everyone to be an individual, basically. So again, this is our task as disciples. We should care to discover all these jewels in the heart of Srila Gurudev. And on the contrary, when we feel a lack of progress, that sometimes that may happen into the journey of the sadhakas, such as Siddhi will say, that there's beauty and there's messiness in the journey. So sometimes the lack of progress will be in connection to this. How much I'm willing to conform to my Gurudev's expectations, or how much I'm willing to conform to my own projections. How much I'm trying to make the two one. How much my projections are connected to the expectations of the sadhu, who is knowing us way better than what we can know ourselves, because they see all that we can be. There's in our potential. So some words, of course, again, we can glorify Srila Gurudev in so many ways and say he's no different from Krishna. By his mercy we obtain Krishna, as we were singing today. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada, yasya dive parabhaktya. So many nice verses we say yesterday, bhaktyaika yasam gurudev tatma. So we can say many beautiful prayers and praise to Srila Gurudev, but all this needs to be translated into our practice and personal responsibilities as the sisya's disciple. If there is no disciple, there is no guru. Again, no matter how uttam Gurudev may be, we need to become disciples, basically. So, a day like today, again, we are celebrating Guru Purnim, which is celebrating the principle of Guru, which is celebrating the principle of disciple. We are celebrating today the chance of being disciples. So hopefully you are organizing a very nice celebration today. I mean, organizing it doesn't mean external stuff, but inside of your heart, feeling this great prospect. So we have the possibility of embracing the grace of Srila Gurudev. Wow, I had the chance of being a disciple. I have the chance of Srila Srila Maharaj will say, which again is very deep, and I felt from my chair at that time as well, he said, Guru means our own potential appearing in front of us. That's huge commitment. Our own potential, all that you can be in the highest possible degree, taking a shape and appearing in front of us, and of course inviting you generously to attain all that you can attain, to be all that you can be. So again, a day like today, and of course not only today, hopefully every single day of our lives, we are invited to deeply contemplate what's our part of the deal, what's the section in the contract that has our name there, how we can increase our sisyatva, that's correct, our discipleship. And again, how to be careful to properly glorify Gurudev in a tasteful way by committing with our side as the disciples. Not so much that he's so merciful that I don't need to change myself. He's so merciful that by his mercy I've been empowered to be all that I can be and to change all that I have to change. So some words about Sri Guru. Of course, in one sense we are speaking more about the Samasti Guru principle, or the general principle of Guru Tattva. Of course, every disciple, every student will direct this meditation more specifically to the Vyasti department, to the individual representation of the Guru as it has come to our lives. And of course, we are very fortunate to have our Guru Maharaj here with us these days and be celebrating all this today. He will be coming later today if everything goes as planned, and sure words, and we will have also Guru Pooja for him, so trying to express hopefully some of these things in the form of different types of offerings. But again, at the end of the day, we are the offering. We will be offering garland and petals and praise and so many things, and that's beautiful. But that's beautiful as long as that's an extension of our own heart and willingness to keep transforming as He keeps transforming. So we have to keep track of the transformational dynamics, if you will. So now, I wanted to also share some words unpacking his pranam mantra, but that's too much for today. That's a separate class to speak about Sri Guru in a more specific personal way. We may have that opportunity in another moment. I think that's enough for today. And I don't know if there's any questions before concluding. Omkar?
I just wanted to say that if people want to read Maharaj's Anubhakti Guru Maharaj's Pranam Mantra, it's online in Harmonies.
There's one article we wrote some time ago. Yeah, thank you for saving my day. There won't be no class about that, but there's an article about that.
So usually it's a meta question, so usually I keep a list of questions when the moment comes on the Swami call. Do you have any more questions? But I was wondering, is it okay sometimes not to have questions, or shall we always actively
Archana Siddhi will ask always any full question if you don't have questions on Swami call. So better you have questions for her. But I will say, of course, I get the point. It's not black and white. No, it's not that you have to have questions, because if not, you are doing something wrong. Of course, if you never have a question in 3 decades, maybe we should try to examine why that's the case. But sometimes there are no questions, which doesn't mean that you are not working inside. No? Sometimes the idea of having questions, and Guru Maharaj, of course, is someone who really tries to invite to have a question, to have questions, because sometimes also the opposite extreme is there, that you cannot ask questions, no? Which is, of course, not the idea. No? Like, a guru should welcome that, should inspire the audience to inquire deeply, and that creates further churning of the interaction, as we see in the Gita and the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami says something, but if Parikshit wouldn't have any questions, maybe the Bhagavatam stops at second count or something. But Parikshit has so many questions and Sukadeva has so many answers, and in this way the whole discourse expanded. So that's how it works, by sambad, by conversation. But of course, at some point you may not have a question because you are still ruminating on their answer to your previous question. But the point is, that's the idea. If I don't have a question, it's only because I'm ruminating on the reply to the previous question. Do you follow up? There is some work being done inside. Something is going on, and that's why I'm still wondering how to do this particular thing in the best possible way. Eventually I will have questions as a result of that rumination. So, yeah. Sometimes there may be questions, sometimes there may not be questions, but whatever the case, we should be having the proper process inside. Because you can have questions from the wrong side, and you cannot have questions from the wrong side. You follow my point? And at a certain moment, you should have questions while you are not having them. And at some moment, you shouldn't make any question, but you may be doing questions from the wrong side. As we were speaking the other day of this article of many wrong ways to present the question, or many wrong questions to present to the guru. There is play for doing nonsense in the name of having a question. So, but you can do nonsense by not presenting a question. So it depends on everyone's particular situation. So, but yeah, don't go neurotic if there are no questions at some particular moment. Someone else will have a question. We have like 60 people here. So. And if you don't have any questions, still you have a question. I like Srila Guru Maharaj will say with Prabhupada, no? The only question he had was, how can I serve you? No? So that's a permanent question. It's always updating itself. That's the very definition of who we are. We started the whole class saying we want to be disciples as our identity. And one name for that is Kinkara. And Guru Maharaj will translate that in his Siksha second commentary, fifth verse. Kinkara means kim karomi. And basically means, what can I do? In other words, how can I serve you? I remember that was one of the things that most impacted me. In one of my first exchanges with Guru Maharaj online, because I met him first personally in Vrindavan in 2007. Kamananda was there. Kamananda was there. Sadhu was there. But after that we started to communicate online and I say basically like, Pranam, good morning. And he replied, how can I serve you today? I was like, like, okay. You already that you made my day with that question basically. I couldn't say anything else basically. So I got like that glimpse. Like Guru said, serve basically. Guru said, so that question is always there. How can I serve you today? How can I serve you later today? It's not something to us only once a day. How can I serve you the next millisecond? No, and so on. So if you have no questions, then still we have the question, basically. And all other questions are in the context of that question. So we don't have any nuanced varieties of that question. Still you have the question. But all the other questions we may have, that's an important point, should be to nourish this question. How can I serve you today? It's not just intellectual curiosity or some, I don't know what to say, but I have a question. If it's not nourishing, the how can I serve you today, better shut up. Because it's not adding to the whole thing. And it may create some sense of superficiality of, I'm always having questions. So yeah. Okay, something else? Mohini?
Thank you so much.
Microphone is coming. Be careful.
Two things. Just so I have one question and just one small point there. When you just mentioned that how Guru Maharaj says in the Shikshashtikam commentary about Kinkara, Kinkara, and in the English he translates this word as minion, which like I had to like look it up in the dictionary because it doesn't mean a servant, but I thought it was really interesting because it's similar to this French word mignon, which is like sweet, so it's kind of, it has this kind of like sweetness to it as well, which I thought was really nice.
Interesting.
And then just a small question, just on a detail about that when you were mentioning about the life of Sri Shukadev Goswami, when he appeared from the womb and left. And then he was called back, and then Sri Vyasadev spoke Bhagavatam. So I heard, like many years ago when I was pregnant with Naika, you know, that it's important, especially for pregnant ladies, to read Bhagavatam aloud to the child in the womb because.
She will stay there for 16 years. Continue.
Because Shukadev Goswami heard it in the womb from Vyasadev. So that's not actually strictly true. I'm just wondering, is that some misconception or something, that he heard it in the womb?
I'm sure he has have heard something in the womb. Mostly the connection with that is made with Prahlad Maharaj. That he heard Narad Muni was there and visited Prahlad's mother and instructed, spoke Bhagavad to her while Hiranyakashipu was performing tapasya as a part of the unfolding of the whole Leela. Prahlad will come out of the womb as who he was, especially a big part out of Narada's Sangha in that particular situation. Sometimes these stories conflate with one another, but also, I mean, who are we to say during the 16 years that Sukadeva was in the womb, he never heard Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. I mean, Vyasadeva was connected to the Bhagavatam, and for sure he has heard the Bhagavatam. So, and of course, even if that's not the case, of course that it's always suspicious to recite the Bhagavatam for oneself and of course for whoever may be inside there. So that's what I could say now. Okay, so something else? If not, we can conclude today.
Just one quick question.
Questions can be quick. Answers, I don't know.
I know the answer will be quick.
You know the answer then?
No, but I know it's a almost yes or no answer. But
okay.
What, can you please repeat what Vaishnava Maharaj mentioned?
No. That was quick.
Did you say to make your offering like
this? Yeah, basically we should offer our individuality in a tasteful way for the pleasure of the Vaishnava. We have an individuality, we're individual, so we should deal with our individuality in such a way. There's a Jungian term also called individuation, which is very interesting. It requires lots of unpacking now. But individuation makes basically means become an individual. I mean, you are already an individual, but what you are doing with your individuality, how much we are being an individual and choosing voluntarily in the proper direction to create an individual self, both on a human level and, of course, in our case, devotional level. So that means individuation. No? Like you are taking your individuality and being accomplished as an individual in every possible sense. So that will be basically the idea. Offer your individuality in a tasteful way for the pleasure of the Vaishnava. And, of course, the Vaishnava have a very unique tongue to relish. So you have to offer that, for that to be tasteful for them, that has to be done in a certain way. It cannot be just done like throwing the whole stuff there, like taste that now or something. So basically that would be the idea. Okay. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Srimad Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gonitananda ki jai, Sri Guru Purnima ki jai, Sri Vyasa Purnima ki jai, Tirupat Mahotsav Tithi Srila Sanatan Goswami Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda ki jai.